In the beginning, God said, "Let us make man in our own image. We give you dominion over all things. Commune with us all your days." Humanity's response? We want more. We hunger for more. Our cravings for more became our demise. What was once humanity's dominion has become humanity's deity. Our appetites dictate the direction of our lives, be it the cravings of our stomach, our unquenchable yearning for possessions, power, popularity, or our longing for the Spirit of God. Our appetites expose the desires of our heart. C.S. Lewis once said, "It would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures, fooling about with drink and sex and ambition, when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea, we are far too easily pleased." We have turned our cravings from creator to created. We have abandoned a holiday at the sea to indulge in mud pies, from fullness and satisfaction in God to the alluring facades of society. We negate the bread of life to indulge in the ever-fleeting pleasures of the world. God is calling us to a holiday at the sea, to have our appetites awakened to His pleasure and His fullness. For when God is the supreme hunger of your heart, He will be the supreme in everything, and when you are most satisfied in Him, He will be most glorified in you. We desire to set our gaze once more upon the riches of our communion with God, feasting on the person and work of God, to satisfy our souls and gladden our lives.
Did you just see that? I just used a C.S. Lewis quote and a Stanley Hauer Wass quote. If you don't know who those folks are, Stanley Hauer Wass is somewhat of a Anabaptist theologian, big name wig. C.S. Lewis is sort of a big Christian theologian, big wig, and so combining those two makes me a neo-Anabaptist, I don't know. I gotta think of a little hot here. So if you sort of got what the video is about, we're talking about fasting today. And I know that a lot of us, when we hear the term fasting, we sort of cringe. Like, especially if you've been in the church long, you know that Christians should fast, you really need to do it, and it's painful, and you never like doing it. And the preacher's always like, "It's obvious we should be doing this." And you're like, "Yeah." But what you guys get from me today is not a sermon to you guys. It's really a sermon to myself. And so I am preaching to myself. If you guys all left, I would stay here because I need to hear this. Another thing is that oftentimes we hear fasting, and there's many of us here that have a sort of a difficult relationship with food in general. And so fasting brings on a lot of baggage, whether it's overeating or not wanting to ever eat, or maybe you have problems with your own body image. Fasting oftentimes gets at these deep-seated fears and anxieties that we have about these issues. So I recognize that, and what I want everyone to do right now is just go, "It's going to be okay. It's going to be all right. We're just going to talk about some fasting." My goal is not to give like an overarching sort of, this is fasting, and then here's all the details of fasting, so you know everything about fasting. There's plenty of resources out there if you're really inspired to get into resources online and books to really go deep in fasting. My goal today is really to reframe fasting. to inspire us to really think about if this could be something that I want to implement or continue to implement in my life, not out of duty, but out of desire. So, before I go any deeper, I think we need to pray. Lord, I believe that you have true good life for us. I believe that the way that you teach things is not to harm us, but to give us joy and fullness. And even during the teachings that you have given to us, even with these teachings, we know that you have such good intent for us, that we be happy, that we be full of your joy. And so, Lord, help us discover where that's true in fasting today. Amen. So, that video had a C.S. Lewis quote, and I think many of us have heard it before. I just want to give a little context. It comes from a sermon that he gave, and he started off the sermon by saying, if I were to ask 20 people, what is the highest of virtues? He says, 19 of them would reply, unselfishness. But if you asked almost any of the great Christians of old, he said their answers would be love. He says, what has happened here? A negative term, unselfishness, has oftentimes been substituted for a positive term for love. Sort of this negative idea carries with it the suggestion of good, I can't have good things for myself, but of going, sorry, I just screwed that up. So we can't have good things for ourselves, but love is oftentimes wanting good things for others. And he's saying that this view of a great virtue, just stopping at unselfishness or sacrifice, stopping there is not the Christian virtue of love. The New Testament talks a lot about self-denial, he talks about. But self-denial, if that's the end, it doesn't seem like what Jesus is talking towards. He says, we are told to deny ourselves and take up our crosses in order that we may follow Jesus. And nearly every description that Jesus gives with sort of how that's played out always contains an appeal to desire. Modern thinkers oftentimes think that if you do something out of a self-desire, it's not moral. So Immanuel Kant is known for sort of changing the way that we view ethics so that if you have something that you're trying to get, it's not truly moral. Ayn Rand, if you know her, she's sort of this, of the same ethic. And oftentimes Christianity is really judged for if you have a self, if you have a desire for yourself to get something, it's not, quote, moral or ethical. But we see that when Jesus is teaching, he's always trying to lead us to do something and saying there's going to be something good for you, and you can be motivated to have those things. And what I think C.S. Lewis is getting at is best explained by someone that you probably wouldn't think I'd be quoting from, John Piper. Piper puts it this way. He says, as followers of Jesus, we're called to Christian hedonism. Now, hedonism is the ethical theory that pleasure is the highest good and the proper aim for our human lives. But Piper describes Christian hedonism as this, and you can put it up. God, there it is. Oh, there it is. God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him. Does Christian hedonism make a God out of pleasure? No. It says that we make a God out of anything, out of all the things that we take to be the most pleasurable in our lives. But Christian hedonism makes God their God. Or Christian hedonists, I should say, makes God their God. And the way that they do that is they find their greatest pleasure in God. So we shouldn't ever tell ourselves to deny our desires, to deny happiness. But oftentimes where we're trying to find that happiness and find sort of the ends to our desires ends up falling short. We tend to try to find it in the created order that we're supposed to be have dominion over, and oftentimes it begins to have dominion over us. So what we're trying to do is trying to wean ourselves off the mud pies, if we remember the quote, sort of this, wean ourselves out of the mud pies that we find ourselves in when we don't even realize that God is offering us this vacation, this holiday at the sea, something greater, far deeper, far better. And oftentimes we don't realize that it's so close to us. It's so near, this holiday at the sea. So what if we saw Jesus as the teacher of Christian hedonism? He's teaching us how to find the greatest of happiness, the greatest of joys, and all of his teachings, even the hardest ones, are leading us to finding sort of all of our hedonistic pleasures in his teachings, in where he's driving towards. And he's trying to motivate us, not by saying deny your desires towards happiness, deny your desires, but he's saying use those, but aim them correctly. So we're going to turn to the Sermon on the Mount, and I just want to give a little recap. So in the last couple of days, we had John taught on the first part of chapter 6, Matthew 6, and we learned that our motivations really do matter when we're doing good deeds and helping the poor and giving alms. And the same thing, our motivations really matter when we're praying. Jesus says, when you pray, don't do it like this and this and this, but do it like this, with these motivations. And it takes us now right to where we're at in 6:16. Let's read that. It says, when you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do. For they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so that it will not be obvious to others that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So let's look at a few things here. It starts off with when you fast. Now, we saw this before already. In verse 2, when John was talking, he talked about when you give alms. It's not if you think about giving alms, but when. It's a pretty normal thing that you would do as a lover of God, as a follower of Jesus. The same thing in verse 7, when you pray, Jesus expects that the people that are going to follow him are going to be people of prayer. And here in verse 16, he talks about when you fast. He doesn't say if you fast, he says when. And just like with prayer and alms, he's saying, don't do it to be seen. Don't do it to get your reward from other people saying, that guy's doing his religious duty, or that person's spiritual. Or, you know, oftentimes if you've been in a very hyper-spiritual environment, people might be like, oh, I'm just so weak. I've been fasting for 3 hours. He's saying, don't do that. He's saying, don't do that. He's like, keep it quiet. Because where you're supposed to get your reward, your life, your joy is not from what people think about your fasting. He's saying, get it all from one place. And that place is in the connection we have with our Father. I'm going to take a little side step. This is a perfect place, sorry, for us just to get reminded that our conference, Central Plains Mennonite Conference, has a covenant of shared practices, and our church is involved in that. And three of those practices are prayer, almsgiving, and fasting. And we see here that it's no surprise that it would be in there. It's pretty much saying, we will follow Jesus together. So, coming back. Okay. Now, a second thing about this text is that Jesus never criticizes the practice of fasting. He doesn't say, you guys have been fasting, and I think it's ridiculous. You know, people who really know God would never do that. Instead, he's criticizing the way that people are doing it to be showy, to get the approval of others. And again, like I said, he's saying all the reward that we get should come from God. Our hedonistic desires are to be sort of directed toward God. So, really quickly, what is fasting? You can take that down. Richard Foster, if you know him, he's a spiritual disciplines guy. In his book, Celebrations of Discipline, defines biblical fasting as such: abstaining from food for spiritual purposes. And this is oftentimes for a period of time. Whatever, I mean, it could be different periods of time. And this is most often combined with prayer. So it's not like a hunger strike where you are trying to gain either some sort of political power or attention for a cause. And it's not like health dieting where you're trying to maybe improve your body in some way or another. Biblical fasting is not about vanity. It's not about getting attention. It's not about getting power over people. It's about connecting ourselves with God, and there's a bunch of other spiritual purposes for it, which we'll look into. So, there are a couple different types of fasts that there's a ton of different ways you can fast, but there's the typical fast, which involves just not eating and drinking water. I bet a lot of us have heard that. But there's also partial fasts. We see this in Daniel, where Daniel is abstaining from meats and like niceties and wine and just eating vegetables and simple foods. There are complete fasts. Complete fasts are when you don't consume anything. This is not safe. So it means you don't consume even water. So if you're going to try something like that, make sure you know exactly what you're doing and that you know you should be doing it. And if you don't know these things, just don't go without water. So I'm not a purist when it comes to fasting, But I do think biblical fasting, when you read about fasting in the Bible, they're talking about not eating food in some degree or another. Now, a lot of us know that people fast, you know, fast Facebook and fast movies and fast going to McDonald's or something like that, which is food, I guess. But I guess, yeah. So I'm not a purist. I don't get angry or frustrated, but I do think we should know that when the Bible talks about fasting, that's what it's talking about. But for many of us that that can't fast, either for the place we're in life or how our bodies react to fasting, there are many other ways to get the same sort of experience or results from fasting. And that could be, like I said, fasting from TV, if you're getting a lot of life from that. Sometimes I need to fast from the news because it can just be too much for me. I can get too much life from knowing what's going on. It can be fasting from your social media, books, all these kind of things. Whatever you're drawing a lot of life from, it could be exercising. You could be an exercise nut and you're just sort of bound to it. And God might want to say, let's take a break from that. So there are different ways to sort of get at it, but I just want us to know when we are reading about fasting in scriptures, it is talking about food. Why are we fasting? So fasting can be actually feasting. I know that sounds like a churchy pastor thing to say, but fasting is feasting. And think again of this sort of Christian hedonism, that when we fast, it reminds us that we're sustained by what Jesus said, by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. That food doesn't sustain us, but God truly sustains our souls. Our spirit is truly sustained by the Spirit of God. And so, when we're abstaining from food, we can take the time to focus on how we actually need to be sustained in the presence of God. And so we seek God's face. Jesus one time was away, and his disciples tried to bring him some lunch. And he's like, what are you doing? And thinking that he's starved, he's like, I've got food. And they're thinking, what? He's like, I've got food to eat. He's like, I've got food that you guys don't know about. He says, the food that I have is doing the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. That's in John 4. So pretty much this relationality that he has with God, living in obedience with God, it brings him nourishment to the place, maybe not physical nourishment, but it actually energizes him. And I would also say this is also worship. Fasting is worshipful. Remember, like that quote said, God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him. And so fasting gets us to a point of saying, I am not satisfied by the mud pies of this world. I am satisfied in the God that has created me. And so while we're fasting, we seek God's face. And in that moment, in that time of saying, like, this is so good to be with you, is when we experience the glorification of God, which is worship. So, potentially, when Jesus is talking about looking all miserable, he may be also saying, why would you look miserable if you're feasting on God? Like, why would your face look like life's terrible if you're actually communing with that good God? Another thing that fasting does is that it recalibrates us. So God created us to have sort of God as our Lord And then our spirit is to be in submission to that God. And we have a soul, our psuche, which is the Greek for, it's like our psyche, our will, our emotions, our you know, our thoughts. And that soul is to be sort of listening to this inner being of us, our spirit. And our body then is to be listening, to be obedient to where our soul is at. And together we are to have dominion over the world, to care for it, to raise it up in the way that God wants us. But oftentimes what happens is that gets flipped. So we have an enemy, you know, the accuser, Satan, who's bringing sort of a reign on this world. And this world gives us stimuli that we think we have to have something, and our bodies crave after the things that this world is saying we need to have. And our soul has to obey what the body is saying, because the body is saying, I need this. And the soul goes, okay. And the soul sort of becomes bound. And the spirit is suppressed by all of this. And Jesus, our Lord, is nowhere to be seen. That's sort of the desire that Satan has for us, is for us to be so flipped upside down that the world and what Satan wants for us, it feels as though we have no way to avoid just doing what our body wants. But fasting allows for us to say, body, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be in control. And so you stop eating, even though the body's saying, I need to eat. Or maybe it's something else in your life that you feel this craving for, and you say, no. So it's putting your life back into reorder. And this also helps us empower our prayer. This reordering can also help sort of get us back into alignment to empower our prayer. Oftentimes the Bible, when it's talking about fasting, it's normally always talking about prayer with it. So you don't just have to give up food and that's it. I think God is wanting us to be in communion with God. So when we're thinking fasting, think also of prayer. So oftentimes when people are praying and fasting, there's like a breakthrough that happens. My dad was telling me the other day, he was just reminding me of this crazy story when two times when he needed to go to Brazil to do missionary work, he's praying and fasting and needed the resources. And it came down to the wire, and he actually felt like pretty much someone said, if you don't get money, we're going to pull our money from supporting you. So he said, all right, I'm just going to say I'm leaving at this date, send one more little message out to folks. He wasn't getting any money. He starts praying and fasting, and they got tons of money, so much so that they were able to like travel to see my grandparents before going to Brazil. And then, even crazier story, is when he needed to go back to Brazil, and he was praying, I think it was on a Saturday, and he needed $500 by Monday to go to Brazil. And just $500, and he's praying, and on Saturday night, a guy named Gary Gaetti, he's a Twins player, wakes up in the middle of the night, and God speaks to this guy and says, bring $1,200 to this church. So on Sunday morning, my dad ends up going to a different service than you normally go, and Gary Gaetti ends up at the same service, and the pastor says, I feel as though we need to allow for some people who have immediate needs to come and share that. So two people came, my father and another guy. My dad said I need $500. This other guy said I need $700. And Gary Gaidy was like, I've got $1,200. So immediately, Gary's like gets his money, he's super excited. It was like the first time he had ever heard from God. And this was a breakthrough in prayer and fasting. So this is like a part of our faith. Like, we get to experience this kind of stuff. And fasting also does another really cool thing. It helps us identify with the poor. So most of us have never experienced the feeling of not knowing if you're going to ever have access to food in time to survive. Most of us have never even got to the point of not knowing if you could get access to food in like a safe time for maybe a day. But there's a lot of people, millions of people, that live their whole life in agony because they don't have access to clean water and nourishment to fill their bodies. So one of the early Christian ways of fasting was that you didn't just fast, but you thought about what you would have been eating and maybe the amount of money that you would have been using, and you give that away. So you experience sort of what people are going through, which gives you compassion, and you use that compassion to serve the folks who need the resources the most. And so this is another thing that we can participate in when we're fasting. Quickly, when do we fast? Whenever. There's no rule. The Pharisees and actually early Christians would fast twice a week. That's 2/7 of your life. And they would even fast on like special days. If you're a Christian, you know, leading up to Lent, or if you were about to be baptized, there'd be a good segment of fasting. But there's really no rule. You don't have to fast in this way at this time where God is saying, I'm angry with you if you're not doing it in this way. Unless God is speaking you directly, then be obedient. But I do want to get us to think. You know, if you're not used to fasting, I want you to move from not used to fasting to trying it out. And if you're used to fasting, I want you to really think, am I doing it for the right reasons? Am I seeking God? Have I just got into a rut, a religious rut of, you know, I was told many times, I got to do this, I got to do this, and you just kind of walk around hungry. Is this something that is really, has the opportunity to lead you to the greatest of happiness, the greatest of joy, as you've sort of shake off how the world oftentimes pulls you into traps to get you into thinking that you are most satisfied in what you eat or what you drink or what you watch or whatever brings you the most life. So I'm running a little bit behind, but what I wanted to do is, since I don't have the most amazing stories about fasting personally, I wanted to invite Dave, who has got some things to share with us. So, Dave...
I don't know how amazing they are.
Let's see if... So, Dave fasts more than I do. He's not supposed to tell us that.
It's not a contest.
And I'm wondering, why do you continue to fast? What's been going on that you're like, this is so good still that I'm doing it?
Well, there was a few things. I grew up in a real legalistic church and home. And so we had to fast every Thursday a meal. And for a 14 or 15-year-old boy, I hated fasting when I was growing up. Like, I'm hungry. I want to eat. And so that's kind of a negative way of it, but it's always been kind of a part of my life growing up. And as I got older and started to be more wise with fasting, I've found that it benefits me in a couple of ways. First of all, the first thing that it does for me is it really centers me down spiritually. It really helps me to center down and focus on my own personal spirituality and what's going on in my life and things that I need to work on. And it gives me a second thing it does is it gives me a laser focus for whatever it is that I'm fasting for. And I feel like I was telling Josias, I don't think it's a magical thing, but there's a spiritual element that God uses when we use fasting to break spiritual bonds and difficulties that we might be going through. And it gives me just a laser focus. When I feel those hunger pains, for me, I fast from food, but when I feel those hunger pains, it reminds me to pray about it. It reminds me to kind of cash in my spiritual chips here, and I feel like I'm in union with God, working on whatever it is that I might be praying on and stuff.
Hmm. Do you have a story at all, sort of connected to?
Well, your story was fabulous, and thank you for sharing that. For me, I don't ever like really know if it's like the fasting network, but I mean, I guess for our community, what I remember that we all could relate to is when Seth was leaving. And I felt like our church, our community was very, very vulnerable at that time. And I was using fasting then to like save our community, save our church, you know. And I used that fasting to try and, you know, whatever God was going to do, you know, I was cashing in my spiritual say-so, so to speak. Mm. And I really, you know, I know a lot of people were doing that, and I feel like that was a benefit for our community. Not necessarily that I was doing it, but for anybody who was doing that. Mm. I think God moves when we respond in those kinds of ways.
Would you encourage other people to fast, or do you think it's just your thing?
Yeah, for sure. No, don't fast. It doesn't. Yeah, no, I would really encourage everybody. And I think, and maybe we're going to touch on this. My old church, we used to it was the Thursday night fasting thing. And I think as a corporate body, it does, it's of a great value. And I wonder if we as a community would take a specific time to fast towards things that maybe we want to pray about, whether it's, our relations, with, people in our neighborhood, or if it's social justice, or whatever it might be, even like for fundraiser for Resic, you know, trying to find coats for a thing. If we would incorporate fasting as a corporate community to kind of see what God would do with that, I think that'd be really a cool thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, sure.
You can actually stay up here because you're going to be leading worship, but the worship team can come up. Let's give them a round of applause. So I just wanted some final things I wanted to say. Again, I want to say that God is most glorified. God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in Him. So again, make fasting about connecting with the Father. Sorry, I'm going to give you some space. And I want you guys to pray about this. Like, actually take this seriously. Is God desiring for you to step into this practice? And like Dave said, oftentimes it's good to have an objective when you're fasting. You know, sometimes there's something that needs to be figured out or something that needs to change, and you want to say, God, let's do this together. Sometimes fasting can bring greater empowerment in that prayer. And when we're fasting and praying, we need to be mentally and spiritually prepared. Because oftentimes when we are pushing up against the kingdom of darkness, sometimes things come back at us. And if you've ever noticed, I know I have, I always get free food when I'm fasting. And normally it's pizza. But there's other things. I mean, if we reframe it and we say, when I'm fasting, I'm worshiping. And so when those hunger pains come or the desire to do whatever you're withholding from, you say, oh, God, I'm worshiping. Instead of saying, oh, this is so terrible, I want to quit. Reframe sort of how you're thinking about fasting. And then also schedule it. Put it on schedule when you're going to do it. Schedule when you're going to pray, because so often it just never happens. And then when you're fasting, you just can't get to prayer. Schedule it. I have scheduled fasting for a long time, and I see it, and I often get time go, man, I just want to eat. So not only schedule it, but unlike me, commit. Commit to it. And the last thing, if you're going to do a little bit longer fast, make sure you are safe. Enter it slowly and then pull out of it slowly. And I have a terrible story, and it's long, and I'm not going to give it, but it ended up where I was on a road trip with hemorrhoids. Yes. Next.
This sounds like a fall retreat fire pit story.
Okay, really quick. So I was in college and fasting, and I had finished a fast, and then like someone just said, I think our church or our school needs to fast. So it was like I just finished one, and then I just had to restart another one. So it was kind of like a longer one than I was anticipating. And then it was spring break, and we were going to go to D.C. And I did not exit this long fast well, hence the hemorrhoids. And I ended up going on this road trip to Washington, D.C. with a gal that I really liked at that time. And so I didn't want to talk about it. It was pretty ridiculous. And I'll stop.
Can't stop now.
Just take it easy. Take it easy. But like Dave said, fasting can be amazing. It can be really empowering, and it can really connect us to God. So let's continue our worship and get the idea of hemorrhoids out of our minds.